today what I was going to do is take a lead from the fact that we're celebrating Christmas in July and talk a little bit about how Christmas is celebrated south of the border. But what I'm really going to focus is on a special celebration in Hispanic countries about Christmas. And I'm going to start with a personal reflection on a TV commercial I was watching in Puerto Rico that I never forget. It was during Christmas, early in December. And one of the things that struck me was that in the commercial, there was like a page taken out of the 16th century of the colonial Spanish times in Puerto Rico. And it was interesting because the music and the ambience was very religious, and there were people that were driving in a horse carriage to the cathedral. And they were really nicely dressed with this old colonial garb, Spanish garb. And then there was a very religious music, and then they went to church, and everything was very quietly and very reverent. And then in the church, there was the priest, and they were all singing very quietly, and there was a cradle in the church, in the altar of the baby Jesus, and there was the figure of Joseph and Mary and the baby Jesus. And right after that, they left the church, this family, and when they were approaching back to the carriage, like three or four small boys approached them and began to do some Christmas carols, but with the maracas, and they were very noisy. It was a very interesting contrast between what was happening in the church and what was happening outside. And the boys were more tan, and they had their hairs were all messed up, and the pants were raggedy, and they were a little dirty, but they were trying to sing Christmas carols and asking for a gift of Christmas. And then the sponsors of the commercial came, Cervantes, which is a famous rum factory? No, rum
producer.
Yeah. And I'll never forget that, because that commercial was really disturbing to me. Because on the one hand, there was the religious, well-to-do, very nicely put Christian experience, and then there were those outside the church singing and you know, asking for gift, and sort of a different expression of what Christmas was. Now, the challenging aspect of the commercial was that, on the one hand, I've always experienced Christmas as a joyful thing, as something that had to do with caroling, with music, with joy. But on the other hand, I always felt that it was also a Christian celebration. And that was very long ago. I was in Puerto Rico. I think I was 11 years old when I saw that. No, 13 years old, I'm sorry. And it just began to raise my consciousness to the fact that in Latin America, many of the interesting and most festive traditions come from what we call popular religiosity. And popular religiosity in Latin America is the kind of Christianity that sort of develop in reaction to the imposition of Christianity. Christianity was brought by the colonizers, usually by the conquerors. And a lot of people think and believe that Latin America is a Christian country. The Roman Catholics have always claimed that it's one of the, probably the third Christian sector of the world, or that comprises one-third, one big third of the Roman Catholicism of the world. And I think it is true, very much in a sense. But what is most prominent of Latin American Christianity is that the most dominant one is the popular one, the what we call popular religiosity. And from that popular religiosity, we have a lot of interesting traditions that I wanted to talk to you about today. I was reading in the library this week a book about Christmas, and they had gathered different people from different places. And when people were talking about their experience of Christmas, there was this Jose that came from Mexico and is shared with them that he felt very much, he felt strange in the way that people celebrated Christmas in the United States. And he said that he felt strange because, and I have to admit that I also feel strange in the way we celebrate Christmas here in the United States, because for us, Christmas is not a celebration that starts the 23rd or the 20th of December and ends up the 26th. Christmas is a celebration that starts at least on December 1st, mm-hmm. and ends not December 26th, but, and I'm very happy for it, January the 7th. For us, Christmas is a celebration that begins in December, and while it ends in January 7th, the center of the celebration of Christmas is really Epiphany, or the Three Kings, or the Magi. And that's a very, very significant experience, because I don't know if you remember the story about the Magi. We call them the Three Kings. It's a story about some wise people that came from Orient. For us, it's a very significant notion that some people that were foreign were able to participate in the whole experience of Christmas. In a sense, the reason why the Three Kings is very, very important for the Hispanics is because we know that Christ was not born in Puerto Rico, or Jesus was not born in Guatemala or Venezuela or in our countries. But yet people from other places were able to become part, an important part, of that celebration. Another important aspect of the celebration of the Three Kings or the Magi is that while the story in Matthew doesn't say that there were three kings, the legend says that there were three. And among them, in fact, the popular tradition has it that they each one of them had a name, and their names were Gaspar, Melchor, and Baltasar. And the interesting thing about the Three Kings is that one of them was black. And right there, what you find is that there is a diversity. within the main characters of the story. That is very, very important for those of us of whom whose tradition is from the very beginning, a tradition that combines a lot of diversity. I think that the other thing that is very interesting in the celebration of the Christmas in the Hispanic countries is that we sort of put together the image or the story of the birth of Jesus with the Epiphany, so that what we have is a large set of characters that are very important for the experience of Christmas. So when we think about Christmas, we think about the star that led the Magi or the three kings. And of course, one of the important things about the stars is that it was an event that went beyond, not only Bethlehem, but Judea. And it took hold of the whole creation. Even a star was part of what was happening. So everywhere in the world, you feel that you're part of that same event. Again, another important feature of Christmas is the fact that there are always shepherds around. And that's a very important character, because shepherds are always related to humble folk. Usually the shepherds were not the ones who owned the sheep, but who took care of the sheep, who were paid to take care of the sheep. And that's an important symbol for popular religiosity, because popular religiosity comes usually from the margins, from the people that were the masses, the people that were not really able to fit into categories from the church of transplant that came from Spain, but that were trying to fit in. And the characters of the shepherds is always a very important one. In fact, I don't know, when we celebrated Christmas, I remember that the characters that usually kids like to play were, of course, Mary, Joseph, and the shepherds. And we always look for the most darkest guy so he could play. I think it was Gaspar. But the shepherds have always attracted attention to Hispanics in terms of putting together the whole Christmas setting. And usually it's the most characters that you have. You have more shepherds than any other characters in the scene. And of course, another important element is the Holy Family and the angels. And one of the interesting and most interesting things that at least you hear in the sermons and in the meditations of Christmas in popular religiosity is to stand out that the angels that were the people most closer to God, the messengers of God, first came to the shepherds to tell them of the good news. Even before the Magi came, the shepherds were the ones who were told that someone was living, was being born, the King of Kings. So those are elements that are very, very important in this popular religiosity experience of Christmas. Again, one of the things that I think is very, very meaningful is how this popular religiosity deals with the symbols of faith to help people understand key issues of Christianity. And I think that the image of those kids playing maracas in that TV commercial is very meaningful, because one of the things that happens in Hispanic countries. And in I'm going to speak about two places, basically. Mexico, for example, and Puerto Rico, is that Christmas is a time to really come to terms with the challenge that the gospel makes to people who believe in the gospel. And one way in which that comes across is that from, like I said, from early December to January 7th, there's a spirit, an ambience of joy, of celebration. And one of the most interesting things is that new carols are always designed or put together or constructed or written. And in the caroling, while you have, of course, the traditional ones, Silent Night and Joy to the World and all those kind of things, what makes caroling more popular is that there are always carols that talk about the social conditions of the people, that challenge people to look at the reality that they're experiencing and relate that to the gospel. The interesting thing is that those carols come out now through the radio. Those carols are heard through the TV. But what is really, really surprising is that in Puerto Rico or in Mexico, but particularly in Puerto Rico, when you take the bus and you go to a particular place, there are going to be some people that are going to go into that bus and they're going to start caroling. And usually what happens is that children, little children, begin to carol, and it's sort of an interesting celebration because they carol, they bring the maracas, you know, very simple constructed instruments. What they're going to do is they're going to tell you a little bit of their story of what they're going through these carols, and they are going to ask you for a gift. It's like the trick-or-treating that we do here in,
Halloween.
Well, that's the kind of caroling that takes place in Puerto Rico and Mexico and a lot of Hispanic countries, starting December 1st and ending in January 7th. Now, there's a spirit of celebration. I mean, when Christmas begins, everything changes. And one of the most interesting aspects of Christmas is the fact that theologically, God gave us the gift of God's Son, Jesus Christ, as a way for us to find a new relationship with God and salvation. So, and in the notion and in the story of the three kings, what is very, well, one of the most outstanding features is that the three kings were not only people from far away, but they were people who knew that God had something that wanted to happen in that time, and they themselves brought gifts to the baby Jesus, to the King of Kings. And of course, you all know that the story that they brought gold, they brought myrrh, and they brought incense. But that's a symbol of the spirit of Christmas. Christmas is basically a time for gift giving. And sometimes, most of the time, what you have is that people are giving to others. And the notion of giving, the sense of having received something so great that you are encouraged to give out of your, you know, of whatever you have, it's something that is, particularly in Christmas, something that you will find in most families and in most houses. Now, one of the interesting things that happens is that you give, of course, we become commercialized. So, in a sense, that is a time where all the stores make business. But if you go to the towns in the country, what you will find is the creativity of people in gift giving. Sometimes what they give is something of their own trade, and they reserve that, particularly for Christmas. If there is a carpenter, that carpenter will build certain things for homes, and during Christmas, that person is going to give them away. If it's a homemaker, there's usually going to be some special kind of treats that you eat, that whenever someone comes, you will bring that forth. If it's some other kind of trade, those kind of gifts are selected and specially given on Christmas time. Now, another important tradition is the caroling. For Hispanics, we make excuses to have fiestas. But in Christmas is the best time of the year to have fiestas. And the caroling that we do again, it's a caroling that starts usually at what, right after you're through with work, like at 4 or 6, and ends up at 4 or 5 in the morning. And usually what you do is that you take the time in Christmas to visit all those people that you haven't seen during the whole year. And what you do is that you make caravans. And you start in a home, and then what you do is you go with that person and you end up in another place. And then there are 3 of you that are going to go to another place, and then there's a fourth party that is coming. So by 1 o'clock in the morning, you have like 20 to 40 cars going to the same place, caroling. And it's a very interesting thing, because what happens is that especially the students that go abroad to study out of Puerto Rico, and families that have left Puerto Rico for a while are able to come to Christmas. And Christmas is a it's a time that if you go to the airlines, they are booked 6 months in advance, because a lot of people use that particular time to be able to reacquaint themselves with what they have left for a long time. And I'm not kidding, I remember that once in our home there was a party of like 100 and something that had been caroling for, you know, for a long time, but and they had ended up in my house. One of the interesting things is that you always prepare for Christmas. So it is a custom that from old that homemakers usually have large pots of traditional rice and beans and special kinds of foods that we prepare for Christmas. And that's ongoing all the time. Usually the meal is rice and beans, and it's a simple meal, but it helps. Being simple have a lot for a lot of people that are coming. And of course the idea is not for you to stay in your home, but to plan ahead, and once they've come to your house, you join them and keep on going. Okay, that's basically some of the things that I wanted to say that are generally interesting. And of course, I'm going to be very, very candid. Since I've been in the United States, Christmas for me is a very sad time. Because while we have our service and we prepare for the 24th, after the 25th, the 26th is a very, you know, a ordinary day, or the 27th, and then you prepare for New Year's Day. But for us, everything is Christmas until the 7th. Now, let me tell you something about what we do with the kids. Celebrating Christmas, again, it was celebrating the Three Kings Day. So early in December, when you're beginning to think about the celebration of the 24th of the 25th, you begin to prepare for the Three Kings. Because the Three Kings brought gifts to the Lord Jesus. And the Three Kings are going to bring gifts to all children and all the people if you behave and if you are good. And the way to prepare for the Three Kings is that since they come in camels, you have to go outside and get some grass and put that grass, be sure to put that grass in your shoes, and put your shoes next to your bed. And the day after Christmas, you find that the Three Kings came, and you'll find the gift that they brought for you. Sometimes some people put them in little boxes, the food for the camels. But it's like a ritual. You go with the kids and you gather some grass for the camels, and sometimes some kids were greedy, put some more grass, hoping to get more gifts. But they know very well that if they haven't behaved, no matter how much grass you're going to put, the gift are not going to be the same. And you know, it's ironic because I lived in Argentina for 3 years. And I remember that the biggest celebration in Christmas was the Three Kings Day, or the Magi, the coming of the Magi. And again, I think that the reason for that comes out of this popular religiosity, which is a religiosity that finds in the stories of Christmas, in the scripture, a history that relates to one's own history and one's own place in society. Okay, let me say two more things. And what I wanted to do was to share with you a sermon that my wife and I constructed for a Christmas service. And in that sermon, there is the words of a particular Christmas carol that happened to be sang like 4 years ago, but I thought it was very meaningful. But I think that what I've experienced as the most dominant experience of Christmas in Hispanic America has been the experience of being empowered by God to be able to deal with the most difficult challenges that you're confronting in life. Christmas is a time in the year that you begin to think about all your problems with joy and with happiness, because you know that after all, there is someone that will be present for you in spite of all the tribulation and hardships. And again, that's the powerful message of Las Posadas. We're going to celebrate Las Posadas here. And if you are careful to hear the words of the songs, it's a song, and it's the experience of those who have been traditionally at the margins of society, those who have been rejected, those who have been experiencing the most hardships. And one would think that kind of experience would harden the hearts and the vision of the people. But on the contrary, what it does is that you begin to put your hopes and expectations not on yourselves, on other people, but on God. And it is the message faith of the Magnificat, that the presence of God comes in very unexpected ways and in very unexpected situations and places, and is able to empower you to bring a new vision of the world, of your life, of your role in the plans of God.
Let me share with you this sermon that my wife and I put together. And I say
that make sure that my wife reads it, not just for the grammar, but because she's also theologically trained and she has a particular experience that is important for me to be conscious of, so that my perspective, I just don't push an agenda on people, but I'm able to establish a dialogue with people. And on the other hand, she does that with me because she thinks that I also have something to contribute. But this is a sermon that basically brings out the spirit of Christmas that I was speaking to you. I read in the paper this week of a man who plays Santa Claus every year. He was telling stories of the difficult part of his job. He said one little boy climbed up on his lap and asked for a pair of shoes for Christmas. Santa looked down and saw an old, holy pair of tennis shoes on his feet. He then looked around and saw that the child was all alone. No parent was hovering nearby. It broke his heart. Another time, a very nicely dressed little girl climbed up on his lap and shyly said in a whisper that all she wanted for Christmas was to see her father. It seemed that he had left the family and she hadn't seen him since. These stories have been haunting me all week, especially as I read the lessons today about bringing good news to the afflicted and binding up the brokenhearted. Mary's song says that God has lifted up the lowly, filled the hungry with good things, and sent the rich away empty. And then, according to Paul, we are to rejoice always, giving thanks in all circumstances. But what of a child who needs shoes and goes to Santa? We live in a culture that encourages children to ask for whatever they want, and then expects someone to bring it. I have never felt very comfortable with that. Even I can remember the unrealistic expectations and dashes of hope of childhood dreaming about Christmas morning. Think it was Bill Cosby, in talking about his childhood, who said that it only took 1 year for he and his friends to figure out that Santa was a phony. He said, kids are real quick to put two and two together when nothing shows up under the Christmas trees in the ghetto. It is a lesson in reality. So where is the good news for a child who asks only for a pair of shoes for Christmas? Is it that God has given this child a future full of hope and expectation the same as the rest of us? That, as Paul says, we have reason to rejoice no matter what the circumstances. Later he will say, even in suffering, because of the surpassing worth of Christ Jesus. Of course, there is something of truth in this. It's hard to feel the urgency of hope and expectation when you comfortably have everything you need. In fact, I believe that God comes to us in precisely those moments when we are the most vulnerable, perhaps hurting, and in the greatest need. At least it has been true in my life. I turn to God in losses, failures, and uncertainties, sometimes fighting, but in the end realizing that God was all I had to trust
and hold on to. Through life's changes, it is God's presence that holds steady through the storm. But for a child in need of shoes, it is simple trust all along that he will survive day to day. There's a beautiful ballad that we have on a record by a popular singer from Puerto Rico. The song is about a boy named Jesus. As you may know, maybe you don't know, but it's interesting to know that in Hispanic culture, it's fairly common to use Jesus as a first name. Did you know that?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know why? Families often give the name of Jesus to a child in order to symbolically entrust that child to Jesus' care. It is also important to know that during the Christmas holidays, children go around caroling with the expectation of getting a gift in much the same way our children dress up in Halloween and go around to ask for candy. And this is the Christmas carol. Singing a Christmas carol at the door is a young boy named Jesus. He's wearing raggedy pants, is barefooted, and has long, tangled hair. Since it is Christmas, he comes with maracas, asking for his Christmas gift with a carol. Singing a Christmas carol at the door is a young boy named Jesus. He's wearing raggedy pants, is barefooted, and has long, tangled hair. I really don't have time for him. In fact, I cannot even listen to him. Hey, tell him anything. Tell them that we have sick people at home, that the owners of this house are not in, that we're just taking care of him. Just get rid of it. Singing a Christmas carol at the door is a young boy named Jesus. He's wearing raggedy pants, he's barefooted, and has long, tangled hair. Don't let him in. We really don't want him here. Besides, we're busy. Our friends are waiting. We have to leave. We have an important party to attend. Tell him that he's really a nuisance. Tell him that it's too late for us to attend him. Singing a Christmas carol at the door is a young boy named Jesus. He's wearing raggedy pants, he's barefooted, and has long, tangled hair. Tell him to leave me alone. Tell him that tonight is the night of the boy in heaven. There is no stable or porch. He might be only hungry. He might be one of the hungry ones of the barrio. No star will light for him. Not even the three kings will bother to go to him. Singing a Christmas carol at the door is a young boy named Jesus. He is wearing raggedy pants. He is barefooted and has long, tangled hair. Jesus, brother, friend, neighbor, the barrio, the people, Jesus, life itself. Singing a Christmas carol at the door is a young boy named Jesus. He's wearing raggedy pants, he's barefooted, and has long, tangled hair. In his Christmas carol, he's asking from us a Christmas gift. Perhaps we need to look at things from another perspective, sort of a reversal of roles. I decided that this child sitting on Santa's knees, asking for a pair of shoes, or the little girl that climbed on his lap asking to see her father are really God's representatives speaking to us today. These children are asking for what God seeks in our world, which is simple justice. What can be more just than a pair of shoes when they are needed, or the presence of a parent when we are alone and in need? A child comes seeking the very things that we rejoice over at Christmas, a world of justice, of righteousness, and peace. For some odd reason, God has called us to be part of our world community at a time of trial and opportunity. May God grant us strength to bring our gift to this community in the most faithful and responsible manner.
See, the carol, it was of course a contrast between what Jesus calls us to do and the response of the people, always making excuses. So this is really what's the strong thrust in the Hispanic tradition. It's the thrust of the popular religiosity calling to us to the attention of the gospel message. And that message comes to us across with the presence among us of the humble, those in need, who are the representative of God, to help us see that God provides us with generous gifts, and then we are called to respond to God's gift of the Lord Jesus with the kind of gifts that we can develop from the blessings that He has come to us. This is really the spirit of Christmas in Hispanic communities, and you can see them very clearly when you go to the house of people, very generous, and they try to make it last as long as possible. One thing that that I should say is that for the last, I would say, 40 or 50 years, this interesting tradition of the three kings has begun to be challenged by the tradition of Santa Claus. And unfortunately, Santa Claus has not been able to be translated in Hispanic countries in the same way that probably was originally experienced in North Atlantic countries as the spirit of gift-giving. The problem with Santa Claus, and you know, it's very pervasive, because what's happening in many Hispanic countries is that you have an experience of Santa Claus that we celebrate on December the 25th, and then the Three Kings that it starts in January and ends up with Epiphany. But I think that the celebration of Santa Claus is still very foreign to us, because the symbol of Santa Claus is still a foreign symbol for Hispanic America. For example, in Puerto Rico, it's a very foreign symbol, because Santa Claus always comes, dressed in a coat with boots and, you know, with snow all over. And, those of you who have been to Puerto Rico or Hispanic countries, there is not much snow. And usually, and unfortunately, what the symbol of Santa Claus becomes is a symbol of commercialism, and lacks the whole Christian background that the Three Kings have. But basically, this is the experience of Christmas in the south of the border. It's an experience of the thrust of popular religiosity helping people come to terms with the tremendous gift that God has given to us, but confronting us with the different way that God acts in the world,
that God's presence is manifested. That is usually contrary to the understanding of success, the understanding of our willingness and resourcefulness to, you know, resolve all the problems. But it's the experience of a God that comes to us in very unexpected places and unexpected people. And it is precisely from those who are in most need and in most trouble that the presence of God is celebrated and becomes joy, an expression of joy, basically because the good news is that no matter how many troubles you have had, God's presence is there to change that reality and transform it. So it's an experience of hope. It's an experience of empowerment. It's an experience of the most gracious gift that you can receive in your life. And it goes on and on and on. And in fact, I remember that, this is funny, not only do we start celebrating Christmas the 1st of January, children don't go to school until January 7th. So it's not like this, that like here in the United States, when you go to school early in January, after it's only in January 7th that children go to school, and sometimes we go as far as saying that we need an octavita, which means still a little bit more of celebration. And some people, if January 7th happens to take place on a Wednesday during the week, they don't go to school until the other Monday. And the interesting thing is that it's not like people believe, punish those who don't come, but it's a spirit of celebration that allows to go even an extra time for people to be able to celebrate this sense of the presence of God transforming reality. I don't know, Latin American countries and Hispanic countries are countries that are ridden by problems, ridden by challenges. And to feel that God is among you, even in the midst of challenges, this gives you a very strong sense of empowerment. So a lot of people allow for the octavita. Even the teachers sometimes take the time. But not for the sake of not going to work. I think it's for the sense of looking at those values in life that probably because of the hardships of life, or just keeping schedules, or trying to do the kind of jobs that you were meant to do, you pass them by, and you begin to realize other important things that you have left beside, and you know that you have to recuperate it. Well, basically, that's the spirit of Christmas in the Hispanic countries. A spirit that really overwhelms. It really, once you're in Christmas, you're like in a different world, in the same place.
When traditionally is Las Posadas? Is that the 24th, or is that any time during the early part of December?
It begins like at the second week of December already. And Las Posadas, it's like the caroling too. What they do is they usually gather some musicians and guitar players and people that sing, and they go to one place and they stay outside, and even if they invite them, they say, no, you're not supposed to invite us in yet. And then they go to different places. It starts early in December too. And it's an opportunity to visit some people and go from place to place, but with a sense, a real serious sense that there are some problems in life, but yet that's a time to get rid of the selfishness in people and be able to open your hearts and your
your doors for other people. But it begins like the second week of December, and of course for the Mexican tradition, the experience and the celebration of the Virgin of Guadalupe is a very important one. And for those of you who are in the Vespers Monday, again, it's the sense of popular religiosity that feels the empowerment of God. When you are at the very lowest of your, of the end of your resources.
Has Las Posadas always or usually quite informal? I guess I had gotten the impression at one time someplace that, that this was kind of arranged ahead of time where this group was going to stop, and then those people there would join them and move on to the next place, and it would finally end up at a prearranged final destination where they were allowed to come in. Is that ever done, or was that?
Yes, in fact, it started from who started those kind of processions were the church, you know, the priest and the as a church related activity, and you still have it as a formal expression of a Christmas event. The Roman Catholic Church, especially in popular religiosity, has a lot of processions. And if I don't know if you're very, very aware of this, but the religious expression of popular religiosity, it's an expression that deals with the processions and captures the sense of the cross, of hardship, of trouble and tribulation of the faith. But it is interesting that in Las Posadas, it's a combination of both there. Real interesting combination of both. But the formal kind of processions were established usually by the church very formally at a particular time before the celebration of the Virgin of Guadalupe and after. But what happens is that there is a, how do you say, this happens automatically by people who go to both to the church organized procession and organize them themselves.
Spontaneously,
to be able to, how do you say, use this sense of Las Posadas to relate to their own struggles as they leave the country and then they come back and begin to relate to their loved ones and to the friends. So it's both end. And the sense of caroling in Puerto Rico is the same way. But I tell you, the problem probably in Puerto Rico that I've sensed is that it has become such a meaningful thing as a way to get back to your roots that it's hardly impossible to get to Puerto Rico during Christmas. And I've tried. but the cost of the air fares are incredible. I mean, everybody's there nowadays just to be able to experience this kind of.
At what age did you leave Puerto Rico? How old were you?
I was, let's see, 28. The first time I left, I was a year and a half. But I'd been traveling around America, South America, and lived in different places. But I remember we have some Hispanic students in LSTC, where I work. And the first year, it's so difficult for them to adapt to a non-Hispanic environment that we start classes in October. And before they leave in the summer, they have already their plane fares to go back to either Mexico or Puerto Rico, or the, you know, those places that you can travel easily. If you cannot do it the first year, you know, that Christmas, you certainly will make any kind of sacrifice to do it the next Christmas.